Welcome to Snack Break. We speak to experts, mostly about policy, but also about snacks.
We've got Paul Morrow with us today. He runs counterterrorism operations at the NYPD. He's the executive officer for Intel Operations and Analysis. Thank you so much for joining us.
Of course.
So, Paul, let's start with the Big Apple, the New York City. It's big. It's massive. How do you protect a city that big?
Well, obviously, that's the challenge. The NYPD has resources that I think are incomparable to any other law enforcement agency in the country. A lot of people don't realize that the department's headcount is bigger than pretty much any other law enforcement agency in the country, but even the federal agencies. And it's because the expanse of the ground that we have to cover is just so large.
There are so many law enforcement agencies in New York. I called up an old friend of mine, Wikipedia. Wikipedia told me that there are 514 law enforcement agencies in the state of New York alone, and one of them is called the New York City Sheriff's Office, I thought sheriffs were like part of the Wild West. What's a sheriff doing in New York City?
Yeah, the term is a little bit of an anachronism. So the sheriff does civil enforcement for the most part. So the sheriffs will enforce. There is a sheriff, believe it or not.
There's a single sheriff.
Yeah, there is a single sheriff who we've worked with.
Is there a horse involved here?
No horse. He doesn't have a star on his chest and all that, and a six shooter. But he his agency does civil enforcement against outstanding judgments from the courts. So if you sue somebody and you win and they're not complying, he is going to be one of the ways that those things are enforced. He also enforces civil judgments by the city. So they're not doing criminal work, so to speak. The name is a holdover from a different era, though. But there is a New York City sheriff.
And within counterterrorism, you guys, see, counterterrorism is not just a New York City thing. It's domestic. It's around the entire nation. There's international sources, of course.
Sure.
People who are, the terrorists who are inspired by foreign groups. Do you guys have to have people in other cities and in other parts of the world kind of investigating these sorts of things?
We do. So the NYPD has a liaison program, and we have over a dozen officers that are stationed around the world permanently. They get rotated out every couple of years. They don't run operations. It's important to note that. But what they do is share best practices and exchange relevant intelligence on how to respond to attacks.
And collecting information, et cetera.
So many times there's been a number of instances, like for instance the Mumbai attacks some years ago. The NYPD was able to have an officer pretty quickly on the ground and to ascertain what was the nature of the threat. Was it something that was going to be potentially have a follow-on effect in New York? Did we have to be prepared for something? Was it something that was global? It was going to reach us? And by liaising with these foreign agencies, we learn a lot. As you note, it's a global effort. And it would be a mistake for any one agency to think they have all the answers.
Running out counterterrorism operations, does that mean you've got a bunch of agents scattered around, undercover agents who are, gathering human intelligence and other sorts of, tell me out here, what goes on?
All right, so my title is actually the executive officer for intelligence operations and analysis. I report to a chief who's my overhead. And what we do is collect intelligence from a number of sources, including open source, which is often an overlooked avenue.
It's like Google or whatever.
Information.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the reasons that we can leverage open source information so well is that we have the linguists. There's a phrase we use in New York, our diversity is our strength. And I have, working for me directly, officers who speak native Arabic, native Pashto, native Urdu. And it's one thing to learn these languages in an immersion course in a Fletcher school or something like that, which is no knock on the Fletcher school, but
we love Fletcher.
But nonetheless, it is a very different thing to speak colloquial Arabic because you grew up in Cairo. So that gives us the purchase on open source that's not even in English, let's say. So we're able to get a lot of good information that way. But we also do run operations within the confines of New York City. We respond to threats. We have the See Something, Say Something hotline. We work very closely, obviously, with the public And we gather intelligence so that we can do pointed investigations. The way I always characterize it vis-a-vis the federal government is that the federal government has international reach, the FBI, CIA, all the Homeland Security, the alphabet soup of federal agencies. From our perspective, they work top down. They have a global reach that even with liaison officers overseas, we're not going to be able to match. Additionally, what I won't have is the technical abilities of the federal government. You know, the NYPD doesn't have access to satellites and things like that. Right. So we work ground up. The metaphor I always use is, or the analogy, the story that I always use is that nobody knows a neighborhood the way the cops who work there do. Yeah. If the cafe on the corner, the bodega, grocery store, I don't know what they call it in Boston, raises the price of the coffee 5 cents, the entire precinct knows within 15 minutes. So as officers embedded in these communities, knowing the people who live and work there, you have to be receptive to what they're telling you. That enables us to work from the ground up.
Does that mean you do a better job than the CIA and FBI?
We would never say that. We would do a different job.
Okay. But you have to coordinate with those agencies.
Well, that's right? Where I was going. So they work top down in the sense that they have this high level information coming in globally from all over the world, and they have local resources as well. We tend to work bottom up. The sweet spot is in the middle. And despite what you may hear or read about sometimes, it works invariably.
So when I think of intel operations, and I think of overseas informants, and I think of fancy cars and fancy gadgets, I think of the MI6, I think of James Bond. What is the coolest stuff that you can tell me about, that you're allowed to tell me about? Give me something good, like a phone that turns into a jetpack, like a jet phone.
You guys have those? I don't get to too many gadgets. In fact, I had a early model BlackBerry up until a couple of years ago. They actually had to tear it from my hands. I still miss that thing because it was ergonomically suited to my hand.
I mean, that sounds like the most uncool thing
right now. Yeah, people have a from the movies and everything else, people have a very expanded view of what really goes on. Intelligence is, and I think any agency will tell you this, is a lot of hurry up and wait. To lean on another metaphor, you have to kiss a lot of frogs before you get that case that's a prince. That's good, because you want a lot of blind alleys. You want a lot of this stuff not to be something you need to worry about. Unfortunately, what that means, though, is you have to be worried all the time, and you have to, sort of chase down every lead. But it's not anywhere near as dependent upon fancy technology as it's often portrayed.
Do you think that the personalities involved tend to be very paranoid type people who get involved in intel operations?
Or they may become paranoid after a while.
Is it better to just be super chilled out?
I would say the latter. But that said, you have to know what to take seriously.
Right.
Your nightmare scenario in this sort of a role is always the thing that, what the term in the intelligence community is, that it washed out. In other words, we checked it, and it wasn't something we had to be concerned about. And your nightmare is always that you wash something out that later ends up
still dirty,
hurting somebody.
Yeah.
And and that's the thing that nobody wants to go to bed with and live with for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, there's this debate right now about encryption.
Yeah.
Private companies want privacy and to encrypt data that's being transferred and transmitted.
Mm-hmm.
As well as protect data that's resting on phones, and the government wants to have be able to have a warrant and be able to investigate
right.
those communications. All right. Well, what's the problem here? What's wrong with having a little bit of privacy? I mean, I don't want the government looking at my poop jokes that I text my brother on a rainy
right.
Sunday afternoon.
Right. Well, a couple of things. First of all, the government doesn't have the resources or the interest in it's interesting. People always assume that. The government is looking to pop out of garbage cans and spy into people's windows. We have to put our resources where we can follow specific threats. So we're not, sending out these sort of blanket feelers to spy on people. But you go to an issue that is very much part of the future of the threats that we face. And I'm going to take as an example the recent stabbing outside of Parliament in London. It became apparent in the aftermath of that the perp in that case had been on WhatsApp what we call a dark app.
It's encrypted, so you can't get to see it.
And so, you know, the theory, the questions, which everybody has, and I don't know, I'm not in the loop on it, so, you know, maybe the British have figured it out, but the question, obviously, well, you know, was he getting instruction from somebody? Was he being directed from somebody? Did he have unapprehended accomplices? And that's going to keep coming up as you have operations that are being run from overseas in country.
So you see encryption being exploited by terrorists.
Right.
Is that what I'm reading?
And the argument that the government seeking access to those apps is somehow unconstitutional, this doesn't hold water in light of the fact that right in the Constitution there is the provision in the Fourth Amendment for piercing citizen privacy with a valid warrant upon a showing
which has happened for a couple hundred years.
And
also it seems like some of these companies, they're also like selling a lot of this private information to advertisers and stuff. So it's not exactly like they want, but they want to preserve. And maybe it's less about what the companies want, more what the people want. People want privacy right now because of Snowden, because of these privacy revelations. So how can you have your cake and eat it too?
People will have privacy. Remember, it has to go past a judge. You have to get a warrant. So the only way you're going to pierce a person's privacy is upon a showing of probable cause, which is the same standard for a warrant since the beginning.
But people worry about it being exploited, A, by the government, and B, by other organizations. So one of the things that Tim Cook, CEO of Apple, said, I think it was a Wall Street Journal interview last year in 2016, says that there's a false choice between privacy and security. He says if you diminish privacy, that does not necessarily mean you increase security, because it can also destabilize, because those are sorts of things that can be exploited if there's a backdoor or if there's a, you know, with unlocking an iPhone or something like that.
I think his macro statement is accurate. It is a false choice between those two.
Okay.
You can have both, undeniably. The protection against that in the American system is the courts.
Yeah.
You have to go through an independent arbiter, a judge. By setting up encryption that cannot be pierced by law enforcement, even upon a judge's decision, what you've done is you've obviated the entire judiciary and the arbiter for what law enforcement gets to see.
Yeah.
That decision now is essentially being made by tech companies.
But can you encrypt and be able to pierce encryption? I thought the whole point was
You can encrypt.
Yeah.
And the argument there that you get back from the tech companies when you say, okay, well, you know, they say we want to have encryption.
Yeah.
And they go all the way with it in the sense that they say our encryption cannot be broken even by us.
Right.
And that right there is where where is the tension in it and where I would push back. The idea that tech companies cannot create encryption that they cannot unlock, it's not a back door. You're going in through the front door. You're going through to a judge. You're getting a warrant. You're serving that warrant upon the tech company, let's say the app company, the dark app company. Those companies, if they are capable of creating an app that's that sophisticated, that essentially supplants the traditional telecoms, if they're going to operate as a utility, then they need to have the responsibilities of a utility. And they need to be compliant to what's known as the CALEA law, which is a law that applies to telecommunications companies, which mandates.
This is from the 90s, is that right?
Yeah, that their communications are reachable by law enforcement. Their answer to that is, well, if we create an app that we can decrypt for you, law enforcement, upon receiving a warrant, we can get hacked and it undermines our platform. And I would argue that if you cannot create an app that you can control, then you probably shouldn't be in the business of essentially operating as a utility. I've also never seen a tech company in any other context admit that they can't protect themselves from hackers. If they are really that good, they should be able to do that. And in fact, under testimony, some of them have said, when pressed, no, we've never been hacked.
Well, speaking of hacking, I kind of want to hack into a couple of little treats we have here. Now your favorite snack is halva.
Yeah.
And, okay, none of these things look all the same, but I was told at the bakery that all of them involve halva, which is...
They told you that, huh?
Well, they did, and they did it. And this one, is called a Hulva bomb, and that's not just because you do counterterrorism. That's actually the name
of
it.
Maybe we'll stay away from
that. It's Hulva, and then it's got chocolate ganache and then layered fondant. That's a brownie with just the Hulva, which is the nut paste. It's sesame-based nut paste, and tell me what you think of that. And then we've got this rose bread. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, very nice.
I might jump in on the bomb because it looks, oh my God. Yeah, it's got like a mousse, actually.
What is this?
So that's a rose bread.
It's Persian.
So Hulva itself is, actually very different depending on what region you're from. This is from an Israeli bakery.
Yeah.
So it's a sesame-based nut paste.
Yeah.
And they throw that in rose bread dough, which is like a cakey.
Interesting.
I haven't tried it, but I'm actually very curious.
So that's what they have in New York, is the, guess it's the Israeli Hulva.
The pure
comes
stuff.
In these, yeah, it comes in like these sort of bricks.
No, it surprised me because, this is great. It's like a, kind of like a lighter cinnamon roll.
Yeah, I am nice.
So, cops, a New York cop,
yeah.
Rightly or wrongly, the image is that they prefer the donut as a snack, right?
Yeah.
Or as a dessert. But you're going for
You know what that comes from, by the way?
Is that the Simpsons or something?
No. Donut shops are generally open 24 hours.
Okay.
So that's my theory anyway, that people would see cop cars parked out there all hours of the day and night.
They'll assume.
Because, and they assume they're only eating donuts. I mean, I don't think I ever ate donuts on patrol.
So you're not a donut man.
No.
You're
no,
a hell of a man.
No.
Is this a favorite in the NYPD, or is this just...
No, I think it's a quirk of where I grew up or something. You know, I grew up in a very diverse neighborhood.
Well, maybe we can change. Maybe Dunkin' Donuts, you watch
career
back.
Career opportunity for you there.
Yeah.
I'll rope up here in Boston.
All right. Paul Morrow, thank you so much.
Thank you, sir.
This is great.
All right.